This is Joe Callis, formerly of the Human League and the Rizzillos, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And this morning we will hear from a local teacher, Devin Robinson, about teaching science during COVID. We'll also hear brand new music from Parquet Courts, Black Country New Road, and Oki with Umeko Ando on the WGXC Morning Show. And it all begins after the local news, which is next. Stay tuned.
Network, this is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network, network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network.
This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news. This is the network.
This is the news.
This is the network. Network. This is the news.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how do I's into here's how you can's. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Marcus DeGrazia Acupuncture of Austerlitz, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Ted Remsnyder is reporting for Columbia Green Media that online shopping and retail sales totaled more than $1 billion in Greene County in 2021. Online sales fueled the county's 12th consecutive year of growth in sales tax revenue. According to the Greene County Economic Development Corporation, the county surpassed its sales tax payments from the state by $6.5 million in 2021 over the level recorded in 2020. The impact of online shopping on sales tax revenue grew in 2018 when a U.S. Supreme Court ruling allowed taxes to be collected on the receiving end of online sales instead of where the products were shipped from. Quote, it's a game changer, unquote. Greene County Administrator Sean Grodin said, quote, the sales tax now is applied to the receiving address, not the shipping address. Previously, when you went online in New York and you ordered your sneakers and it came from someplace like Philadelphia, there was no sales tax. But if you went to the mall or Walmart, there would be sales tax, unquote. Grodin said, quote, when you throw in the pandemic, for many months the malls were closed, but the federal stimulus money was being pushed out to stimulate the economy, so people still bought their sneakers, they just went online to do it. They did more shopping and they did it online, unquote. Grodin noted that sales tax is the county's single largest revenue stream. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Luis Pari Sarduni reports for the New York Times that on February 3rd, a Republican-led group of voters filed a lawsuit seeking to overturn New York's new congressional maps as unconstitutional. Democratic lawmakers in Albany last week approved district lines that would favor their party elections for the next decade. The lawsuit, which was brought by 14 voters, said, and I quote, "This court should reject it as a matter of substance, as the map is an obviously unconstitutional partisan and incumbent protection gerrymander," end quote. The lawsuit that claims the redistricting, and I quote, "brazenly enacted a congressional map that is undeniably politically gerrymandered in their party's favor," end quote, was filed in state Supreme Court in Steuben County, a Republican stronghold in the state's southern tier. The courts, however, have never turned down a map approved by the legislature. Jeffrey Weiss, who heads the New York Census and Redistricting Institute, said, and I quote, "The state's courts are really going to be really reluctant to overturn a state legislatively enacted plan. The question is whether the court will reject 50 years of precedent and reject the plan," end quote. Read more about this story in the New York Times.
Jeanette Wolfberg is reporting for the Columbia paper that public school enrollment in Columbia County has fallen to its lowest level in more than 40 years, but the decline is in line with the reduction in the total county population under the age of 18. The county's six school districts discounted 6,267 enrolled students for the 2020-2021 school year, 3.9% lower than the enrollment of 6,521 during the previous year. The overall enrollment countywide is 44.5% less than the 12,127 students enrolled during the 1976-77 school year, the first school year included in the State Education Department's current public data set. Enrollment in the Columbia County schools declined every year since 1997-98. Between 2010 and 2020, the county population under age 18 dropped by 16.3%. That's almost as much as the loss of enrollment between 2009-10 and 2019-20 of 17.4%. The state defines school enrollment for a year as the number of students counted in October. Read more about the story in the Columbia paper.
Joshua Solomon reports in the Times Union that Governor Kathy Hochul is proposing a subsidy for farmers so they can pay their workers in the same way that grocery store employees are compensated. Currently, most workers in New York get overtime pay after 40 hours, but farm workers do not receive extra wages until they reach 60 hours of work. Last month, the state's Farm Labor Wage Board voted to slowly lower the threshold for overtime from 60 to 40 hours over the course of a decade. Farmers claim they do not have enough money to pay workers for the hours they are employed, and faced with Hochul's subsidy proposal, claim they would not be able to make it to the end of the tax year for reimbursement. New York Farm Bureau spokesman Steve Ammerman said in an email, and I quote, "While we appreciate the governor's proposal, we hope to continue the conversation with her to find the best possible outcome. Ultimately, we are asking for her to maintain the 60-hour threshold so a tax credit would not be needed," end quote. Those standing up for the rights of workers have a different view. New York Civil Liberties Union Executive Director Donna Lieberman said in a statement, and I quote, "The Department of Labor must prevent another generation of workers from suffering by accepting the Wage Board's recommendations, and with Governor Hochul's dollar-for-dollar refundable tax credit, there is no reason that the overtime threshold cannot be lowered to 40 hours in 2024, eradicating this racist Jim Crow policy once and for all," end quote. Hochul's office says the subsidy would cost taxpayers $130 million annually. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Mid-Hudson News is reporting at a news conference in Kingston on February 7th. Governor Kathy Hochul, a Democrat, said there is currently an interview process taking place to name a new sheriff for Dutchess County. Sheriff Butch Anderson died in September, and Undersheriff Kirk Imperati, a registered Republican, was named acting county sheriff. Dutchess County Sheriff's Deputy Andrian Licari is currently being vetted for the position. LaCari, a Democrat, is the daughter of Wappinger Democratic Committee Chair Robin LaCari. Quote, "We have individuals that are being interviewed," unquote, said Hochul. Quote, "There's a process, very strong vetting, background vetting that goes on, and we interview people," unquote, she added. Hochul explained that she recommends a candidate to the Senate for approval. Quote, "We want to make sure there is someone who has permanent authority in that place as soon as possible, so the process is very much ongoing," unquote, Hochul said. Just last week, Republican and Party announced he would run for sheriff in the upcoming election. And Parardi was interviewed to be appointed with Hochul's staff in November. He said, quote, "I told them that I am not a political person and I am willing to help everyone," unquote. He said he would appreciate it if the governor allowed him to remain in the position until the voters decide who they want to fill the position in November. Read more about the story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that 84 assembly members and 39 state senators are backing a bill to boost wages for home care workers. There are 12 Republicans on that list, making it one of the most bipartisan proposals in Albany. Assemblyperson Richard Gottfried, the lead sponsor of the legislation, said, and I quote, "There is a real shortage of home care workers because more and more people can't go into that line of work. We need to enact fair pay for home care so home care workers can be adequately paid so people can get the care they need without either having to go into a nursing home or forcing a member of the family to give up their career," end quote. Governor Kathy Hochul raised the issue in her State of the State address last month, so the bill should see little resistance this year. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Tuesday, a slight chance of rain showers after 1 p.m. It will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 38 degrees. Tuesday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 16 degrees. And on Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 40 degrees. And Wednesday night, mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 25. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Tuesday, February 8th, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on 90.7 FM, including 11 a.m. tune in the early Electromix show with Tim Clark, Newt Wiegand, and Charles Wernan among the featured composers today. Then at noon, after the local news, Rob Saffer is live from Ulster County with the Overlook show today, featuring Dollar Brand, Jockey Biard, Charles Mingus, and Sun Ra, among others. Then Algorithm as Ritual at 2 p.m. features Genesis Briar Piarage, the Fugees, Aaron Ambarchi, and Sophie and others. Then Melissa Dubin and Aaron Davidson are the artists featured on the Radio Art Hour at 3 p.m. And the WGXC Congressional Report is featured on the local news show All Together Now at 6 p.m. And then Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda comes on at 7 with Jenny Getty and Amanda Lees reviewing the latest movies for your ears on 90.7 FM.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
And in the WGXC community calendar, there's all sorts of local events for you to find something to do outdoors, indoors, and more. One event is the Groove Harmonic Trio performing this Saturday at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, and live on the radio at WGXC, a webcast at WGXC.org, and a broadcast on 90.7 FM. The show starts at 7:30 p.m. Saturday, February 12th, and it's the Groove Harmonic Trio, which is Keith Prey on organ, Mike Wooten on guitar, and Bobby Previtt on drums. Turn out for some live improvisation or tune in at WGXC.org.
Welcome to the video rental store in your mind.
Looking for something to watch, but feeling overwhelmed by all the options?
Feeling unsatisfied with all the boring, restrictive categories like romance and drama or horror?
Tune in to Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda every second and fourth Tuesday at 7 p.m. and get turned on to movie genres like eco-horror,
unsettling kids movies,
alien boyfriends,
creepy therapy.
Start listening so you can start watching today.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, February 8th. Early on this morning, it is 21 degrees in Hubble Corners and 29 in Netherwood. It's going to be similar to yesterday. We will have a high of 38 degrees around 1 p.m. with winds reaching around 7 miles per hour. Conditions will be freezing, so layer up and grab a hat. Overnight, temperatures fall to 17 degrees, then bounce back up to 42 degrees by 3 p.m. 32 degrees overnight takes us into a slightly moist Thursday with a high of 44. Overnight, a low of 22 happens before a lightly precipitating Friday with a high of 40. Sunset today will be at 5:03 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:56 a.m. Looking way up, we see that G1 class geomagnetic storms are expected on Wednesday after a coronal mass ejection passes Venus and then strikes our atmosphere. Solar wind speed is currently 453 kilometers per second at 4.5 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 22 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 78. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Curtin family of Tivoli, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
The international struggles of our world may lead to
nuclear holocaust.
To survive, you must have protection from radioactive fallout.
In the past, heavy equipment necessitated a long, costly operation for out-of-home shelter installation.
Today, Survive All basement-type shelters offer a combination steel and concrete do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Civil defense approved, Survive All offers maximum protection from fallout and falling debris, plus a basic equipment kit for family survival.
There's low initial cost and FHA approval. Nothing down in 5 years to pay.
For your family's protection, see a Survive All shelter today.
Trying not to think. open course. For New York state lines, I think of all that went wrong. The sailor boys light up in song and they sing of London. Love they made there, will it really last? Any time? What's that that you said to me? Oh, I'm a chaos space marine, so what? I love you, darling, will you take my metal hand? It's cold. In time you will find these things take up space inside your mind. Where you could be keeping the honest thoughts of the sea.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hudson-based duo Buke and Gace have a 2021 collaboration with So Percussion coming out. And here's the first track, Diazepam, from Hudson's Buke and Gace.
To forget to
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Devin Robinson, welcome back to the show. You are a teacher.
Yes.
Could you please introduce where you teach and what you teach?
Yeah. So I'm Devin Robinson. I'm a high school science teacher over at Troy High School in the city of Troy. I teach a living environment regents class and then also a honors or advanced placement zoology class. So those are the two different classes I teach. I've also taught a two-year living environment program.
So for you, what is teaching science like?
I feel really lucky to teach science. It's something that people are naturally curious about. You can really use to engage students. And, you know, we commonly think back to our experiences in school, and sometimes science teachers are the ones that stick out,
you know,
being special to us, whether they're doing incredible feats of chemistry or physics, or, you know, showing, you know, the diversity of life and in living organisms. You know, I remember my science classes fondly, and they definitely shaped who I am and my curiosity today. And, you know, I think that I try to do that with my students and provide them that same passion and opportunity that I have, and that, you know, they get to do different things and they get to see and perform experiments, and they get to partake of, you know, the great driving curiosity that makes us human. I think it's, I love it. It's my passion, my favorite thing. So.
And it's one of the few classes where you're active in it. You're touching things and moving around, where a lot of other classes, you're learning from a book, you're often seated.
Yes, yeah. You know, I look at myself and my colleagues in the way we design our lessons, and we are constantly thinking of ways to engage students in hands-on science, stuff that's connected to the real world, that's authentic, that they can take outside of high school, or they might see outside of high school, or they might be, you know, curious to learn about and use to kind of propel them. And ultimately, you know, I guess the biggest thing is make the world a better place, you know, to learn from, you know, what we can experience in the world and try to do more with it. But they definitely get to have fun. They get to get messy. They get to work with weird things. They get to see exciting pieces of our world.
So my brain is more of the artist brain. And I've, you know, the sciences and maths are considered, they're often better funded than the arts and maybe considered more important. But I would argue that it's very similar to the arts. What is your feeling on that?
Yeah, I think we need a little bit of everything. I think there's, you know, art is so important. And I know there's a huge movement of bio artists out now that are a growing body of research and study. And they're doing cutting edge work. And, you know, it's exciting to see interdisciplinary content coming together and being used as one. And I think that the way both science and art can buffer one another is an exceptional pairing. I think it's something that can push both of them further.
Why is that?
I mean, if we look at the natural world is beautiful. And we take a lot of our inspiration from biology and engineering. You know, we look at the way animals are structured or insects build colonies of honeycomb shapes. And we use that and apply that to build bridges or very strong infrastructure and buildings. It's something that we often overlook, a small bird fluttering around in front of us, but there's so much perfection in that design, and that natural selection has just shaped and formed over millions of years to do very specific functions. And I think that looking at a bird also is beautiful, and people take inspiration from that in photography and painting and sculpture. And I think that, you know, it's, that can be a tool there, and that utility of both of them working together is outstanding. I think it's great.
Do you think there's experimentation in both sciences and the arts that are also very natural for that pairing, and that both of them are very open to getting things wrong?
Oh, yes. I mean, science in an essence is about proving things wrong, or, you know, and most of the time, we have a hard time doing that. And I think also at the same time, I think failure is the greatest teacher. I think that, you know, we often strive to be perfect in a sense, and failure is really what we learn from. So I think, you know, experimenting with different media, different colors, different paints, and then, you know, looking at or different video or music and or sounds, and then looking at an experiment in a different light is, you know, the breakthrough to discovery.
As a science teacher, is that something that you really encourage your students to do, is to embrace failure and not to see it as an upset, but as one thing to rule out? Failure is the way to figuring out what's right.
Yes, definitely. You know, and sometimes failing can be hard. It can be difficult. It can be stressful. But in the end, I definitely think, you know, once we survive those moments of failure, we come out stronger. We come out more knowledgeable. We come out more experienced. And I think that that is one of the things that's often difficult, is that perseverance and acceptance. I think that that can be quite difficult. And sometimes as teachers, we have to model that for kids. You know, we have to model that for our colleagues. And we have to say, like, hey, you know, I tried this lesson and it did not go well with the kids. It went horrible. You know, I set the desk on fire and, you know, my coffee spilled all over my computer and the tarantula is escaping into the back room. You know, so I think that, you know, but going forward, you know, there's a lot to learn in those instances. And students see what we do every day, and they're, you know, they become, you know, these observers or, you know, or facilitators a bit in the class, and they see what, you know, we make mistakes too. And I think that that's a moment of both modeling and also as a way of connecting with them. You know, I mean, I had a 4-foot snake chomp me on my arm while the assistant superintendent was videotaping me doing a lesson. And I learned in that moment, I should have fed that snake on Monday instead of, you know, on Thursday. That was a mistake. But you keep going. And small shout out here to my mother, who's super important.
Always.
Woman and person who, you know, is the reason of one of the people I am, who I am today. She's had some battles with cancer and other things that have been very difficult. And through chemo and radiation and everything she ever said, the words that always stick with me the most with her and that are the most powerful are that when we get knocked down, we get back up. And I think that that applies in many instances to the idea of failure and, you know, that snake biting me in the arm and, you know, just learning from that. But no matter what, you have to keep going. You always keep going.
I'd love to hear an example of an experiment or an activity that you do with your students each year that you find resonates with them really well and why it's such a good lesson.
Yeah. I will forewarn that this makes me sound rather barbaric when I tell this lesson, but don't worry, everything is okay. All right, I'm gonna say that right off the bat. So the one of the things we talk about is mitosis and cellular growth and regeneration. There happen to be these small flatworms called planaria, which they sort of look like leeches. They're very tiny, maybe a quarter of an inch to a half an inch at the most in length. But their bodies are loaded with stem cells. And one of the things I do with the kids is I tell the kids to cut them up. And that may sound horrible, but they take out scalpels and they proceed to cut the worms in any ways they really want. And the remarkable thing about the worms is that if you cut them in half, they both halves will grow the correct head or tail, whatever you cut off, on the other half. There is some agency where they have to take care of the planaria, and you know, they build up this sense of like responsibility of taking care of these tiny little worms that they just, you know, cut into pieces. They're really blown away at it. And it is bizarre to see. And it's not instantaneous, it takes a little bit of time. But by the end of the project, after we've gone through all the supplemental materials, there's also this like sort of wow factor, like, wow, these completely regenerated. And it inspires some questions that immediately start firing in their minds. And one of them is like, how come humans can't do this, right? Like if someone has an accident or loses a finger or, you know, something even worse, how come they can't regenerate that? And then we talk about stem cell application and we go further with it. We talk about careers in biotechnology. And we talk about, you know, what does this mean for the future? Because they live in the golden age of that science right now. So, you know, I think they really enjoy that one.
That's great.
Like I said, it sounds bad, and the idea of chopping up animals is horrific, but I rest assured it's okay.
We're speaking with Devin Robinson, a high school science teacher. How long have you been teaching?
This number seems wild. It marks my 10th year in education. 5 years of teaching at Troy, and then previous work in New Jersey, and then in and around the capital as a substitute and TA. So, but 10 years as a full-time teacher in the classroom this year.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And these last 2 years have probably not been very easy for you. How's that been?
Yeah, they've been rough. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about what was it in March of 2020 to be a teacher?
So in March of 2020, I remember when the like official lockdown went down and we went full remote, which was the first stage. And full remote, I was in this room teaching with, to my computer and hoping the kids were sticking with it and doing their best. At that point, I realized though in the beginning that I had to do something different. And it just happened to be around the time of an annual migration in New York here of a salamander called a spotted salamander. And the spotted salamanders are really interesting. They're an explosive breeder. I did my first project on spotted salamanders in the fourth grade. So I am a fond fan of this species. Ultimately, the way to find them is that these spotted salamanders, first off, they're large. They're like probably get up to like 8 inches, almost 9 inches. They're jet black with like light purple bellies and then big, bold black and yellow, or sorry, yellow or orange spots down their back.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very dynamic looking and they're beautiful. I mean, they're awesome, but they live underground their whole adult life. So to see them is pretty rare. And most people aren't around the woods digging up logs and, you know, digging for salamanders. So to see one of these is kind of odd, but one night a year, the first warm spring rain, they all come out at once. And they all go to the ponds and they go to these vernal ponds. And unfortunately, finding them is sort of difficult. And I live in Albany. So I started this quest to find spotted salamanders. So I film myself going to ponds and, you know, and recording stuff and talking about ecology and doing everything I could to, you know, to really pull them in. And I was seeing the kids. There were recordings of me going. And so then I would post them on Google Classroom. And at first, nobody watched them. And then after about the third one, once I fell in the pond for the first time, that was when they just started watching them. And it really hooked them. That worked for a little bit to keep them engaged. And ultimately, I didn't find the salamanders that season. So it was like womp womp, but they saw me trying and we saw the eggs. So I had the eggs on footage, but I didn't have adults. So the kids didn't get to see the salamanders that year. But the point I'm trying to say is that during 2020, teachers were doing wild things to keep kids engaged during the lockdown. We came back in September of 2020. And had a hybrid model or a full remote model or an everyday model. And parents got to pick for their kids. The hybrid kids were in on like, they did purple and gold days. So every other day was purple and every, and the day between were gold. And that was, it was tough, but the kids did okay with it. You know, they muscled through. They did a good job. But there was a lot of fear going back, I remember. A lot of times my colleagues and I were definitely afraid. And this was, it was definitely like this fearful idea, like, you know, well, this district is full remote, all everybody, no matter what, how come we're not?
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I think it was tough on everyone, but, you know, it was, yeah.
So you were talking about doing crazy things to keep kids engaged, and that's not just about keeping attention and making it colorful, but being at home, there are other distractions, there's equipment issues, internet issues, there's the huge mental health toll of what was taking place during the pandemic. What kind of behaviors and reactions did you see in your students?
Yeah, so we saw a visible difference in the kids when they came back in September of 2020. You could just see that there was like exhaustion, isolation, sort of that anxiety. You know, they were having all the same problems we all had to deal with in high school. And on top of that, all of the fear and anxiety of the pandemic. And there was a lot of like misinformation, you know, about what was okay, what wasn't. You know, I mean, if I was a kid who had a sick parent at home and the kid next to me is not wearing his mask correctly or not, you know, even having it on and the teacher's not saying anything, that was, you know, I can just imagine what they felt, because I felt sometimes like that too. That some people took it more seriously than others, and that made it very difficult for, you know, for everyone in the school. But the kids were definitely different. Opting out was probably the biggest one, you know, having their head down, you know, wanting to stay isolated. You know, you could see, and there was about half as many kids in the school, so normally the halls are very busy and bustling, and instead they were rather ghost town, because only half the kids were there. So it was just, classrooms were quieter. It was just a different environment. It was something like palpable. You could feel in the air in a way. It just, you know, it was rough. I really feel for them, and I felt for them in those moments. So,
did you feel supported? Do you think the students felt supported?
I think there's definitely different levels of support that some of us received more than, you know, depending on what it was. I know that at the school, baskets of food still went home, backpacks with dry goods that, you know, that support families in our district still went home. I know that we still provided meals every day to the kids, which is outstanding. They delivered meals to their homes every day. And we do have a strong counseling center and social workers that do outstanding work at Troy. It's outstanding to be able to work with them. You know, I think that a lot of times they were nervous about, you know, being in clubs and, you know, and whatnot. And I know that sports were different. I coach varsity tennis, and tennis was different. You know, that was also a little weird, but I know kids also really enjoyed those times where they could be with their friends, and that was a big thing. A lot of them hadn't seen their friends, and school is that time to be able to, you know, have that social interaction that they didn't get the chance to have.
How did tennis change?
So riding buses was a big challenge. Buses had to be certain spaced around. The season was substantially shorter. Before each game, we marked different balls. So one team had balls with like two, you know, three balls, and then the other player had three balls. So, and they were designated, and they weren't supposed to touch the balls. Luckily, tennis is one of those sports where you're socially distanced and outside. So we were able to play and have our full season, which I think was great. The girls have a wonderful time. Girls are in the fall and boys are in the spring. So, but they had a, they loved it. It was a good moment for them, and it was nice to see them laughing and having fun with their friends and doing an activity outside, and, you know, still competing, and so they did a great job. I'm very proud of them.
So it's hard to say where we are in this pandemic. How do you think that that the community can come together to give better support for students right now?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really important question, is, you know, how can we how can we provide kids the support they need in the community? And I think, you know, probably one of the biggest things is, you know, taking part and being active in terms of doing things to, organizations like Capital Roots and working in community gardens and participating in clubs and, you know, seeking safe but also engaging social interaction and areas where kids can learn and, you know, maybe find something they're passionate about or explore their passions. Or, you know, I think any space or opportunity for kids like that is really necessary right now.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
I was wrong.
It never ends.
Absolute failure.
Simply waits for you to fail. Simply waits for you to lose.
You must fail. You must fail.
To fail, to fail, to fail.
Yes! You can't stop me. I am everything that's mediocre. And I get off on it, thinking about it.
But it's too late.
I think you're gonna have a problem.
I am failure.
Wouldn't it be great if somebody could write an app that would identify all the psychopaths among us and let the rest of us just kill them?
I'm going to turn this into a game.
Try it.
Perfectly replicable obstacles.
Error.
Which pulls the corners of the mouth back and up into a smile. Mistake.
What is required to create a meaningful life for people who are not needed?
Not just unemployed. Unemployable.
People who are not needed.
I smell bad.
People who are not needed by our society.
Shoot me! Why don't you shoot me? I wanna die! Shoot me! Kill me!
No.
I'll make you kill me!
Thinking as a is traumatic.
He was right about that.
Kill me!
A gorilla can learn how to use a microwave.
Kill me!
You will become what you think about most. Whether it's true or not.
Why bother? A reward. Enjoyable while hooked up to the biometric monitors. Failure seems to be more emotionally rewarding. You can attempt to kill anyone else who is playing the game. However, you will have no idea who else is playing the game. Bowling balls with monkeys inside them, hooked up to the biometric monitors, floating in outer space.
Kill me, kill me. And I get off on it.
I'll make you kill me.
With your permission.
And electrical activation of the facial muscles.
Kill me.
Mistake, mistake, mistake.
Give up. Self-preservation.
Love you.
help them to give up.
People who are not needed.
If you'll just stop crying.
Help them to give up. Give up, give up, give up.
You will.
Give up.
You will.
Give up.
You will. You will.
So maybe this sounds hard, but you're still thinking.
You will. You will. You will. You will. You will. And then you will die.
Wrong.
From 2009, this is Jim O'Rourke and his album The Visitor.